8 o'clock hour, Cairo Nights. Jack Stein filling in for Mr. Mike Lewis. Question of the hour. Who is President Trump running against? 98973 State Roofing text line. Again, who exactly is President Donald Trump running against? I'm not so sure, Producer Anderson, given the news today, that he is really running against anybody. I mean, obviously, he's running against Joe Biden. Joe Biden is there physically. Kamala Harris will be there as well. But who is he? Is that really a competition for him? And I say this as someone who studies politics. I'm not saying this as someone to say, oh, yeah, no, Trump's going to dunk on Joe Biden. I say this more just as an observation. Because when I look at what we could have had, when I look at, you know, Trump versus Bernie Sanders, that would have likely have been a really interesting, really engaging debate, fiery debate about socialism versus capitalism, about the swamp versus about a utopia. I'm using their language, right? I'm using these two guys' separate terminology. But now I'm starting to think that Donald Trump is not so much running against Joe Biden. When I was talking to somebody about this the other day. I said, who do you think Joe Biden's going to pick for vice president? And a friend of mine says, well, it doesn't matter who he picks, because, you know, whoever he picks, we're hoping that that's the person who's eventually going to be president, right? So they were basically saying that we know that Joe Biden's sleepy and he's 80 years old, and that whoever the VP is will likely be the person, the focal point of the election, that whoever he picks will be the person where all the attention is focused on. And I initially thought, well, that's a little disingenuous, because wouldn't you want this to be the race where you're looking at it and you say to yourself, well, that's our guy. You're looking at Joe Biden, you say, that's the guy that can 100% beat Trump. But now what it's become is that whoever's standing next to Joe Biden in these people's minds is going to be the person that's going to be going up against Trump. So again, former Vice President Joe Biden has chosen California Senator Kamala Harris to join him on the Democratic ticket. The two went head-to-head during last summer's Democratic presidential debates, but will now join forces to take on President Trump and Vice President Pence in November. CBS's Ed O'Keefe reports.
She's only the second black woman elected to the U.S. Senate. And since 2017, she's perhaps best known for clashing on the Judiciary Committee with two of President Trump's attorneys general.
How can you not remember?
And Supreme Court nominees.
To announce my candidacy for President of the United States.
Her own presidential bid began with tens of thousands of supporters in Oakland, California, but ended before the Iowa caucus.
So the way this was announced was via tweet, in which he says, I have the great honor, this is Joe Biden, by the way, I have the great honor to announce that I've picked at Kamala Harris, a fearless fighter for the little guy and one of the country's finest public servants, as my running mate. Let's just remember those words, right? The country's finest public servants. CBS News White House correspondent Steve Portnoy had a reaction from the president.
I'm Stephen Portnoy.
She was my number one draft pick.
Still, the president says he was a bit surprised that Biden picked Harris.
She did very poorly in the primaries.
The president depicts the senator as a tax raiser who would slash military funding and back socialized medicine. But Mr. Trump reserved his harshest criticism of Harris for her questioning of Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh.
I thought she was the meanest, the most horrible, most disrespectful of anybody in the U.S. Senate.
So Pence and Harris will be going toe-to-toe October 7th, and sure, that's going to be boring as well. I don't see why that – I don't see any of this being exciting whatsoever, particularly if Joe Biden decides that he's not going to go to the debates for whatever reason. I'm sure he might cite health reasons or health concerns, which is totally legitimate. I don't want to come down on him for that. But as far as his assertion that Kamala Harris is one of the country's finest public servants – being from the state of California, I am well-versed with our fine Senator Kamala Harris. And so I figured maybe I should take some of my knowledge, throw it up on Cairo Nights, see what people really think about Kamala Harris. So according to GovTrack.com, she is ranked, quote-unquote, most liberal compared to all senators. So she follows her voting, her track record, pretty liberal. Not leftist. That's not the thing that they're trying to say. They're just trying to say that she has a pretty, you know, they rank it liberal, progressive, conservative, so on and so forth. She has joined bipartisan bills the least often compared to all Senate Democrats. Of the 471 bills that Harris co-sponsored, 15% were introduced by a legislator who was not a Democrat. So as far as her being willing to work across the aisle, there's some data that says that she's just not willing to do that. She held the fewest committee positions compared to Senate sophomores. She introduced the second most bills, however, compared to Senate sophomores. And this is a big one. She was the third most absent in all votes compared to all senators. So we send her to Washington to do a job. She's our senator. And she missed 61.9 of votes. She only voted on 265 of 428 votes in 2019. She was busy. She was campaigning. She was wasting everybody's time. But when you look at this kind of stuff, she's elected to do a job, which is to represent the people of California. And she was the third most absent. Just not there. So for me, it was like, well, what are we paying you to do? You're supposed to be there voting for the fine people of California. But to some good points, she co-sponsored the eighth most bills compared to all senators. And another negative point, she got bipartisan co-sponsors on the third fewest bills. So she's not really known for being that much reaching across the aisle if you look at that. And these are, from my perspective, is Donald Trump really going to be running against Joe Biden? I don't really think so. Especially if they're not going to have a debate. If they do have a debate, does he have to convince people that he's more lively or that he's more expressive than Joe Biden? No. Mike Pence is going to go up against Kamala Harris. I don't really see that going any way in particular. I think, and again, let me know what you think. Who is President Trump running against in 2020? 98973 is the state roofing text line. I think that Donald Trump is running against COVID-19. I said it. Boom. I think that Donald Trump, a hot take, right? COVID-19 is running for president. No, COVID-19. Yeah. I think that he is running against COVID-19 and the perception the only thing that can of COVID-19. Stop him? I don't know.
The only thing that can stop Trump.
COVID-19. He's on the debate stage, and then a gigantic virus ball is on the other side of the debate stage.
That'd be fun.
And it's just an amorphous ball blinking as he rants at it. But the reason I say this is data to actually support this. So from March 18th, 2020, this was a poll that was done by Monmouth University. It says, what is the biggest concern facing your family right now? 50% of respondents said coronavirus COVID-19. Job security, unemployment, 7%, and it goes down from there. The economy, 5%. Healthcare costs, 5%. Family illness and health, 3%. 57% of respondents said COVID-19. All of the other issues that I could find, all the other polls that I could find represented pretty much the same thing. Everything that I could find from about February to June all represent this idea that the one thing that the majority of Americans are concerned about is COVID-19, coronavirus, and the things that kind of cascade from that. My job, my healthcare. And so Trump is going to have to make the case. President Trump is going to have to make the case that he's the guy to reroute the economy out of COVID-19. Can he make that case? Can he win over that voter base, those people in the middle who were saying, I don't like the way the guy talks. He's really brash. He's kind of rude, but he's the guy that can get the job done. Are people going to be willing to forgive his kind of eccentricities, his kind of extreme kind of, hey, I'm that guy. Everything's going to be great. Everything's going to be terrific. Can the people in the middle, the suburban moms, can they say, you know what? He's better than sleepy Joe Biden. I honestly don't know. I sincerely don't know. There's a couple other things before we get to text messages, Producer Anderson. In terms of polling data, some other information that I was able to pull, 95% of Democrats and Democrat-leaning independents and 72% of Republicans and Republican leaners agree the coronavirus outbreak is either a very big or moderately big problem for the country. So this is a bipartisan issue, right? Just based on polling data. This is not something where you go, well, only the people on the left are concerned about coronavirus. Well, this information might suggest otherwise. I would say that if you are a Republican, you are a Democrat, this is the primary issue that people are concerned about. They're really not, I don't think that people, Joe Biden is not the kind of guy that inspires that kind of confidence. He's not an Obama. And in many ways, he's not a Hillary Clinton. He doesn't really have that brand recognition. He's kind of, if I had to rank him, he's kind of the Shasta Cola compared to Barack Obama, who was very much so like the Coca-Cola, and then Hillary Clinton, who's kind of like Pepsi. You know what I mean? If you look at skilled politicians, just skilled people who can go out there and say, I'm the man to do it and make you believe it. Obama was one of those guys back in 2008.
Right.
He Joe Biden
inspired a lot of people
feel
to kind of get
same.
Behind him. I kind of know what you mean there.
Yeah, that he was able to get a lot of people really fired up. And again, I'm not talking about policy. I'm not talking about procedure. I'm not talking about any of that other
He's
stuff.
Just the
I'm
guy.
Just talking about just the guy. Yeah. He was kind of the Coca-Cola.
I agree.
A lot of people all charged up on him. What are the text messages saying there, Producer Anderson? What do we got going on with
yeah,
that?
Yeah, we got a lot of texts coming in. I think the most prominent one that I've said to your question, or that I've seen to your question about who is Donald Trump running against, is most people are saying himself. I think most people are kind of, if they are kind of upset with the way he's been handling things and kind of looking for a change, then I don't necessarily think that they'll necessarily look exactly in the way of Joe Biden as the answer to everything, but for people that are kind of like a little tired of the antics. And I think that's one of the Joe Biden's kind of strategies here. He's been just kind of trying to stay out of the spotlight as much as possible, just making sure he doesn't screw anything up and kind of letting Trump just say a bunch of things to, you know, get people a little more and more polarized. So I don't know. We'll see. And we'll see what happens, because I think that's probably a pretty good representation that Trump is basically just going to have to deal with this himself, and his reaction to all of this is really going to be a determining factor on what's the results going to be.
If he and Biden are up on stage, Donald Trump, Joe Biden up on stage, and they're right. having the debate, Trump, given the kind of political strategist that he is, if you want to call it that,
right.
he will be able to list off 6 months of accomplishments right off, just boom, he'll just go for it, right? This was right. great, this was terrific, this was beautiful, so on and so forth. If that's enough for people, he wins it easy, hands down.
Is that what people
if
are looking
it's not
for
enough
then?
Maybe I mean, you know, I'd like to think that the voting body politic are nuanced enough to yeah. say, well, I want to see my job come back, I want to see the economy open back up again.
Yeah.
If he can convince them through his direction or his rhetoric that he can do that, that he's the guy to do that over sleepy Joe Biden,
right?
He wins it. But yeah. I just don't see Joe Biden have the same amount of fire. I don't see him having the same amount of passion. And again, so people think that I'm coming down on Joe Biden. This is just from a political, kind of an analytical perspective. I in no way, shape, or form think that, you know, could Joe Biden potentially beat President Trump? For sure. For sure he could. What he would have to do that is he would have to wake up and he would have to say, oh my God, I'm running for president. I better get my act together. If he can do that and he can come out of the basement and he can step up to Trump and not let Trump kind of overtake him in rhetoric, not let Trump kind of overshadow him, which is what Trump is the best at. He will overshadow you in an instant.
Sometimes in a bad way, but yes.
Sometimes in a bad way. And you even see it, you know, you even saw it in that Chris Wallace interview that he did a couple weeks ago, where Chris Wallace has a set of data that he has handed to President Trump. And Trump says, that's not my data. And then he hails over one of his assistants, and then she brings him his set of data, which he then hands to Chris Wallace. And in that go-between, you see the focus, the power shift to Trump, where now he's saying, this is what's going on. This is my data. We're in Trump land right now. So, you know, I was also looking at what other things are important to people. It seems like by and large, by almost every, you know, metric I could find in polling data, people are concerned about immigration. Not so much this year. People are concerned about healthcare, racial and ethnic minorities by criminal justice system. No, people, it doesn't seem like people are concerned about that to an extent, but not as much as they're concerned about their job, the economy, and when they can open back up again. Coronavirus. That's the argument that I'm making right now. Trump, and you could say that that's him running against himself. You could that would be totally valid for someone to say.
It all. Yeah.
Yeah. He's running against the virus. And if he get ahead of it, if he get ahead of it and say, listen, this is everything that this is my case. This is everything that I've done over the last 6 months. I think he'll win it. I legitimately do. If he can't do that, then people are just going to say, well, let's get the new guy in here. Let's get sleepy Joe Biden. He knows how everything goes. He's 80 years old. And Kamala Harris will be there as well, and that'll be fine. What's going on in this text, Mr. Anderson? What's going on over
there? There's a little bit of pushback on the whole Joe Biden being a little old and kind of that whole thing. A lot of people saying that Trump's only 3 years younger and that he's definitely in a little bit better. Biden, I should say, Biden is in better physical shape than Trump. It's kind of
I would agree.
it's kind of a, it's honestly it's a toss-up at that point. They're both in their late 70s, and I would not necessarily think of their physical features as one of their main talking points in their presidency candidacy. But, you know, I think it's just kind of the idea that our two choices are two guys, old men in their late 70s, is kind of what a lot of the text line is looking for. We're looking for kind of some different choices here. So, I don't know. That's kind of been a talking point in that, you know, not necessarily the most vibrant of, like, as you were mentioning earlier, the most vibrant of, you know, tickets. Either that's not necessarily the, you know, the most exciting voices you're going to hear during the summer, or, you know, it's going to be, it obviously is always going to be interesting debates and everything. But like you said, there would have been some fireworks with Bernie Sanders. I would have been glued to the television set every night.
I'm going to give you a hot take right here, Producer Anderson.
All right,
people often ask me, though, they say, Jack Stein, you're one of the smartest political commentators of all time. You're right on point. Your analytics are amazing. Your research, you're probably the smartest person I've ever heard in my life.
That's a hot take right there.
Who are you
going
to vote for? And then they say, who are you going to vote for? And I lower my sunglasses. I look them right in the eye and say, you know who I'm going to vote for? Me. Jack Stein 2020. That's nice. Where I'm going with all of this.
Nice.
That's what I'm doing. You want a young guy who's quick on his feet, who's nuanced enough, kind of a King David type figure, just wants everybody to get along, tired of all the partisan nonsense.
Yeah.
We're going to get some bipartisan action. You pick this guy.
Yeah.
Pick the master. It's going to be great. It's going to be terrific. It's going to be beautiful. Jack Stein 2020.
And maybe it's just because I'm a little on the younger side, but I've just always seemed to connect a little bit and really feel that, like you said, passion a little bit more towards the younger presidents. So I really, honestly, I hope that that is a trend in the future, because I think that not necessarily out of touch the older you get, but it's just really hard to connect with that kind of younger group of audience that you're really, obviously is a big kind of group of your campaign that you're going for, too. So they're important communities that we should be looking out for.
I agree. And I wonder, you know, as soon as all this nonsense is over, you know, as soon as we're past the Trump era in 2024 and we can get away from the media nonsense and the political nonsense of it all. And by nonsense, keep in mind, I mean all the hype around it. Oh, my God, everything is such a big deal. I wonder what 2024 is going to look like when we go back to like Ted Cruz. We go back to those kinds of Cory Booker. Kind of we go back to that era, or will we ever, is another very good question.
Is it going to change for good after this?
You're listening to Cairo Nights. Up next, we're going to be talking with Miss Rachel Bell. Going to take a quick break. Be right back after this. You can ring my bell. Cairo Nights, Rachel Bell in the studio. Rachel Bell, how are you?
I am good. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm grappling with the fact that I'm a first name, last name guy at 32 years old. And I'm wondering if that's going to be cool when I'm still, when I turn 40.
Well,
you know what I mean? First name, last name, Rachel Bell, Producer Anderson. These are, is that still going to be cool in 10 years?
I think that there are certain names that are first name, last name. Like, you just have to say them together. So I have people in my life that I do that to. And you're turning me into that, because now you're just Jack Stein. Mm-hmm. Also, I didn't know you were 32. You're such a young, vibrant young man. Wow, look at you.
I know. Mm-hmm. Full of big old gray beard, lots of gray hair, full sleeve tattoos. I look like I just got out of prison, but yes, full of vibrant, full of life.
Do you have a small bird living in your beard that pops out like Father Time?
How did you know? Oh my God, his name is Pastulio.
Wow.
How did you know all about Pastulio?
Well, I read his blog.
What do you got for us, Rachel Bell?
All right. So this is one of those stories where it started one place and then it went somewhere else. So I'm supposed to be interviewing this guy about his website. But then David Pham from New York City tells me that he has been quarantining completely for 5 months. We'll get into that in a minute. But like all of us are quarantining. A lot of people working from home. Most of us trying not to go to the grocery store so much. But New York's David Pham, he has out-quarantined us all.
And I have not stepped out of my apartment for 5 months now.
Wait, literally? Like you haven't gone to the store or anything?
No. Well, actually, except for one instance last week, have not taken a single step outside of my apartment. Even last week, I didn't step outside the building. I just stepped into the hallway into another apartment. But yeah, we're just playing it ultra safe. We just don't want to risk any possibility, you know.
So David lives with his parents and his sister. His parents are around 70 years old, which is why they're being so cautious. And they all rely on grocery delivery for all of their food.
However, in the early days, for quite a while, you couldn't get a delivery slot from the major providers. Like Amazon Prime Now or Instacart. And even when you could, there wasn't really much stock.
So his friend suggested that he try ordering from local farms, that there were some farms that would deliver meat or vegetables or even things like milk or honey.
And it was the best meat I'd ever had in my life. I just realized, wow, there should be a database of farms that deliver to help other people who are in the same boat. So I remember that very night, you know, I worked until, you know, 5 or 6 in the morning, creating the first version of the site. And then, you know, around a week or two later, launched the first version, posted it up on Reddit. And we only had 30 or 40 farms. We were really proud of that. And it just blew up. I knew it'd be useful, but I wasn't expecting that kind of response.
So the website is called Farms That Are Delivering. It's like a sentence.com. And it connects people with nearly 1,400 farms in all 50 states. So more than half of those farms will deliver directly to your door. And then the rest offer pickup sites.
We have over 30 filters, everything from the kind of product you're looking for, whether it's beef, pork, maple syrup, milk, all the way down to the breed of the animal, to what it ate, to whether it's organic, whether it's humanely raised, whether it's kosher and halal.
You can even filter for women-owned farms or Black-owned farms. And the website is super simple to use. All you need to do is type in the city or the state where you live, and then all of the farms in your area come up. So when I typed in Seattle, I saw that there are 314 farms that will deliver right to my door, and then another 138 farms that I can pick up from. So I can order honey from Spirit Wild Farm in Carnation. I can get clams and oysters from Hama Hama Seafood in Lillywop. I can get hazelnuts from Holmquist Hazelnut Orchard in Linden. The list goes on and on. And of course, this is a win-win for small farms that are struggling through the pandemic. And David said that this has got him and his family back in the kitchen again.
One of my favorite things to come out of this is I've been spending usually around 2-3 hours cooking with my mom because we can't go out and because, you know, we don't want to order delivery from restaurants because of the risk. We've been making all these Vietnamese dishes that we wouldn't have never even attempted to make because we could just go buy it really easily from a restaurant.
Yeah, you heard right. They're not even getting takeout. These people are serious quarantiners. And after 5 months of being with his family 24/7 around the clock, he somehow doesn't have a single complaint.
I'm really lucky because I talk to a lot of my friends. You know, they're having tough times. They tell me, you know, like they're either bored or sad. And I mean, in my house, there is not a single moment of boredom or quiet. We're a very close, tight-knit family, and we watch a ton of movies. So relatively certain that we're like 99.9% all the way through Netflix's catalog of movies. But it's been good. It's been great.
If you want to find a link to Farms That Are Delivering, go to mynorthwest.com/Rachel Bell.
Rachel, that it's a cool invention. I think that that's awesome. I love the ingenuity. I love the idea behind it, but I'm of two minds about this, Rachel Bell. He's not been outside for 5 months.
Yeah, I don't even think he remembers what a farm is.
I don't think he remembers what a breeze is. I mean, that to me it's cool. I mean, I can appreciate it. We live in America. He can do what he wants to do. But if I was close with that guy, I would give him a pat on the back, maybe a social distance pat on the back. I'd be like, hey, good job, buddy, from 6 feet away. But I'd also be like, dude, you can go to a park, right? You could isolate and be away from other. But see, I'm of two minds about this, Rachel Bell. Cool invention, really sweet guy to do that for his parents, and I applaud that. But 5 months, no sunlight, no vitamin D for 5 months, and
I know. Like, they have a balcony, he said, that they've been using more than ever. I thought the same thing. I thought, are they hypochondriacs? Are they like this all the time? But then living in New York City is so different. So I always say Seattle is a fake city. You know, all the neighborhoods like Wallingford and Ballard and Fremont, if you got dropped in by helicopter, you would never know that you were in the middle of a metropolitan city. You know, we have all these parks. You can walk down the street and see very few people. But if you're in Manhattan, I mean, you can't walk down the street without seeing a ton of people. So I think to get to the park, which is very busy, you have to go past a lot of people. So I think being in a place like New York is the worst place you could be right now, just because you can't take, I mean, I go outside every day. Like, I take a long walk. We go camping or hiking almost every weekend. But if you're in a big city and you don't have a car and you can't escape into nature, you have to pull a David and just be stuck with your elderly parents in the apartment, which is my nightmare. I can't visit my parents for more than a day without somebody yelling at somebody / swearing at them / turning into a child. Like, that's my MO is like becoming about eight again and being like, no, and like going into a room and slamming a door.
I have to mail him a bubble boy outfit. I feel so bad for him. He hasn't been outside. I got to get him like one of those old, you know, the diving uniforms from like the early 1900s with big brass helmet. And I got to get him one of those because I want that guy to go outside. Even if he's frightened of going outside, someone's got to help that guy out. What was the name of that website, by the way, Rachel Bell? I want to write that down.
FarmsThatAreDelivering.com, or you can go to MyNorthwest.com/Rachel Bell. I feel like the first time he goes outside, he's going to start writing poetry again because he's going to be so moved. He's going to feel the cool breeze upon the cheek, and he's going to taste in the air the urine of, you know, somebody from the... I mean, he's just going to be like... sensory overload and like other people. It's going to be too much, and he's going to become the next Emily Dickinson.
Rachel Bell, thank you so much for that story. I think I'm going to go home and I'm going to stay inside my house for 5 months now.
Order some
clams. If one man can do it... You're listening to Cairo Nights. Going to take a quick break. Be right back after this. Thanks so much, Rachel Bell.
Thank you.
Headphones up way too loud for that one. Jack Stein filling in for Mr. Mike Lewis. 98973 State Roofing text line. A lot of text messages. I want to skip good news so we can just go right into the text messages. Someone says, okay, I got a question for you, Miss Bell, in reference to the story that Rachel Bell just gave to us. Why did they have to bring race and gender into finding the farms as the me going to be any better because it was black owned? I see that. Is the meat going to be any better because it was black owned, or is the milk and it tastes better because it was female owned and not male owned? I don't understand why you're talking about something good and not adding a race and gender to it. I think that people do that because it is a selling point for a lot of people. A lot of people, like Target, started doing this thing where they say, well, we're going to now have labels on certain products that are made by black-owned businesses. And there is a consumer out there that's really important to them. And as a capitalist, like myself, when somebody says, hey, you know what, this particular thing is important to me, I'm more inclined to buy that product if it was made by an all-female company or it was made by a black-owned company. That's fine. Nothing wrong with it. I certainly don't find anything wrong with it whatsoever, Producer Anderson.
No?
Additionally, looks like there's a couple. I'm going to just go back a little bit. People are talking about Donald Trump. We're talking about Joe Biden.
Right.
A lot of people saying, I'm not voting for Trump or Biden. Somebody says, bring back the burn. Should have been Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
It should have been Bernie Sanders. I will say that. It should have been Bernie Sanders in 2016.
Yep.
If you go back and look what Donna Brazile did and the DNC and all of that nonsense.
That's a big thing, too. Yeah, that it's overlooked tremendously.
He's been robbed. He's been robbed twice.
Yeah.
And it's really disappointing for me to see that you have Bernie Sanders, who I will say that he has been the most consistent politician of all
time. He sticks by his word, that's for sure.
He certainly does. And, you know, say what you want about his policies. You know, I had a good time making fun of Bernie Sanders, 3 years ago. But actually looking into what he was talking about, you can't knock the guy. He's a little weird. He's a little kooky. But you can't knock the guy. He's very, very consistent. And, I don't get any bad vibes from Bernie Sanders.
I liked your assessment of it the other day when you said that he has the same diagnosis, just a different prescription, right?
Exactly. Yeah. We're both looking at the same problems. We both diagnose the same problems. He and I just have different prescriptions as to how it should work. I'd actually love to sit down with Bernie Sanders, to be honest with you.
Oh, yeah.
I'd love to talk to the guy. Someone else said, Jack, can't you wait one day till you put Kamala down? This is
love
from 425. Can you wait one day till you put Kamala down?
He can't wait.
Of course, you must be a conservative, so you'd rather have lying DT. He's done a horrible job. In fact, nothing. I don't feel like I was putting down Kamala Harris down. I was just reading you the facts. I was just reading you what she's done since she's been a senator in my state. So I was actually listening to a show earlier today. Actually, a friend of mine's show. He's got a talk program. And I was listening to his show, and he did a good 5 minutes on how Kamala Harris looks. And I was so disappointed in him. He was really ripping into Kamala, her appearance. I guess she had plastic surgery recently, and he was just making fun of her, and he was mean spirited, I guess you could say. So I texted him, and I said, "Hey, buddy, what was that all about?" And he said, "Oh, it's all in good fun. It's all in good fun." So I think you do have to measure coming down on somebody, right? It's one thing to read some statistics about what she's done over the past so-and-so, and it's another thing to be like my buddy who decided just to rip into her for 5 minutes.
That's for sure. And you were just kind of saying that it would have been more exciting, a little bit more fireworks with Bernie instead of her.
Yeah, it would have been. It is a historical moment, and I do want to give her full credit for being just the first black vice presidential candidate, first major black vice presidential candidate, Democratic Party. That's amazing. It's amazing. So, good for her in that regard. And then another one from 425. From my observation, this one is so good, Producer Anderson. This is
you like this one?
This one is so good. From my observation, I think Jack Stein, side note, that is spelled wrong.
Yeah.
Jack Stein is annoying to hear at any time of day. Come on. Try to talk some common sense rather than being blindly biased to your right-wing thoughts. I appreciate a host who can talk with some common sense, even if I do not agree with him or her politically. Yeah, you know, me too, bud.
I was saving that text for the end. I was just going to read that, and just like that's how we're ending the show right there.
It's, you know, the thing is that it's interesting trying to navigate Trump's world, because we do live in Trump's America, and it's very difficult to try to navigate it in such a way where you can talk about politics, or you can talk about social issues, or you can talk about Democrat versus Republicans, so on and so forth, without getting people irritated in some way. And as somebody who prides himself on having political conversations with everybody on any side of any issue, the idea, I think, that you always have to be super nuanced and you can't share your opinion is just, that's not what good, fun political conversation is. What ruins good, fun political conversation is when you start to tell people what they can and can't say. And when you start to tell people that ideology or that thought process is
wrong,
then we can't have it. I want to hash it out. I want to have the debate, which is why, my significant other, Sarah, she's pretty staunch lefty.
Yeah.
She's a pretty staunch lefty. college educated, one of the smartest women I've ever met in my life, one of the most beautiful women I've ever met in my life.
Right.
And every time she and I get into a debate about politics or whatever, we hash it out. And it doesn't matter, because at the end of the day, truly at the end of the day, I think that your political affiliation does not make you who you are.
No.
Which I covered last week.
I completely agree. What do you think about the kind of thought of, like, in those political debates? I've always kind of struggled with this, but whenever someone says, like, agree to disagree, do you just kind of stop and hold it there? Or are you kind of like, no, we should be trying to figure this out. We need to hash this out, sort of thing.
I've always been of the mind that, you know, that, okay, so Bernie Sanders, just real quick. Bernie Sanders had this idea about 6 months ago. He was on Joe Rogan's podcast, and he said, what if we taxed derivatives in the stock market by 1/3%? And I thought, wow, what an interesting idea.
It is an interesting idea.
And he said, that way we'll be able to raise a certain amount for healthcare and so on and so forth. I thought, wow, what an interesting idea. Let me examine that idea. I didn't immediately say, oh, what a filthy socialist. Right. We got to get him off Joe Rogan. I thought to myself, well, let me tool that around in my brain a little bit.
Think about it. What are the effects? See, yeah, totally.
Think about it. Instead of just dismissing it. So I think that's how we're going to get to, I think that's how we're going to get through all this nonsense. Listening to Cairo Nights, I'm Jack Stein. That's producer Anderson. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Stacy's coming into the studio to teach me up about sports, because I don't know nothing about sports. And we're going to have a good time. I think we're going to talk about steroids. I think we're going to talk about steroids and more COVID-19.
All righty.
Take a quick break. Be right back after this.